I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Jake Cunningham, and this week we haven't got a film of the week, we've got a filmmaker of the week. We are this time delving into the films of Agnès Varda for Gleaning Truths, a retrospective, and with it I've got a round table, Karina Antropos, Beth Webb and Rowan Woods with me, who all contributed essays to a wonderful Agnès Varda website, and we're going to be talking through the films of Varda, who's got a new release, Faces Places, coming on the 21st of September. So, guys, do you want to just quickly introduce yourself? Beth, you've been on the show before.
I have indeed. I have been on here before. So I am Beth Webb. I'm a freelance writer and broadcaster, and I co-program the Bestial Test Fest with our other guest, Karina Antropos, here.
Excellent. And so which film have you contributed an essay for?
So I was actually at the launch last week for Gleaning Truths, where I hosted a panel with some wonderful panellists on Cleo from 5 to 7. And then my essay was on Je crois de non, which was Varda's film on her late husband, Jacques Demy.
Excellent. And also in the room, we've got your partner in crime for the Bestial Test Fest, Karina Antropos.
That's right. My name is Karina Antropos. I co-run the Bechtel Test Fest with lovely Beth Webb here. And I contributed the essay on Faces Places.
Wonderful.
Which is her latest film.
Hopefully not the last.
There's some life in her left.
Yeah. And finally, we've got Rowan Woods as well.
Hi, yes, I'm a programmer. I'm one half of MISC Films, a programming collective dedicated to theatrical screenings of rare and underscreened films. And I also program with East End Film Festival. And I contributed an essay on The Gleaners and I, a documentary from 2000.
Yes, not as the website might make you believe, that 1985.
No, not 1985, no.
Excellent. So I'll just give you a quick background on Gleaning Truths for those that don't know about this new season. So this is going to allow venues across the UK and Ireland to exhibit and engage with these new restorations of 8 of Agnès Varda's films, all leading up to the release of Faces Places in September. This has all been set up by a few members of the Curzon team, and we're excited to bring all these films into the cinema and to be able to put these essays together, which are all available on the website. There's actually one for every film, and we've got the three of you in here to talk about yours as well. But let's go back a bit further in time, because actually the three of you have kind of written essays about the more of the later stage Varda. Beth, you, as you mentioned, you were at the launch of The Gleaning Truths, which was around Cleo from 5 to 7. It wasn't her first film, but let's step back in time to that early work, maybe. And Le Pont-Court and Varda before she became a filmmaker that we know and love.
Sure, yeah. No, so it was a wonderful event last week. And the film, it was a lot of people's first Vardas. I think yourself,
yes,
first included. So she comes from a photographic background, and she made Le Pont-Court in her sort of mid-20s, ahead of the boys of New Wave, I will point out. So before your Demis, before your Truffauts.
In my first A-level film class, the French New Wave was the first module that I had. Not a mention.
Mm. Yeah. This is it. And she's been deemed, like, which I find hugely unfair, she was deemed the grandmother of New Wave well before grandmotherly age. And she was well ahead of them, of Godard. She made the film a good few years before that. And then she kind of, got So Cleo from 5 to 7 was actually made because Goddard recommended her to a financier who wanted to make another kind of undiscovered film after Breathless came out, Goddard's film. So because of that, from Cleo from 5 to 7 came about, and you can really, I mean, the panel that we did was on kind of the female gaze, fashion and film. But it also lends itself to kind of Vida's photographic gaze, which is so prominent in the film. It really does set off... so a little bit of context about Cleo from 5 to 7. It's set in real time, supposedly. I mean, that's not really been... Vida says it is. I'm not going to argue with her, but...
It feels it. It does feel it.
It certainly
it's
does.
It's an all-encompassing day.
And it follows a popular songstress as she walks around the city waiting to hear whether she's been diagnosed with cancer or not. And I think this is a really great example of how Vida takes, not necessarily, I mean, it was probably taboo at the time that the film came about, but that dealt with death and disease in a young, beautiful woman. And I think that's kind of recurrent throughout her work. But it's also worth noting that she makes such a celebration out of things like death and things like abortion. I think when you think about cinematic attitudes towards that, and then she goes and make a big MGM musical out of one. So it's certainly worth noting that she takes these very delicate and sometimes not very much discussed topics and turns them into these big, beautiful, very personal pieces of work.
Mm. There's a lot of nodding going around the room throughout that.
Yeah,
I think I loved Cleo, and I'm getting some big smiles over here.
Likewise, and it's also one of those really, really great films about the city. Yeah. I love, you can really feel her background in photography, and it's got this really wonderful formal composition that almost makes it surprising as well that she had, prior to making her first film, La Pointe Court, she had no background in filmmaking at all.
Yeah.
And actually, she says, had hardly ever seen a handful of films and wasn't sort of immersed in cinephile culture, in criticism and in programming in the way that a lot of her new wave contemporaries were. But something like Cleo from 5 to 7 feels like it's the arrival of such a precise, formal kind of cinematic vision. Mm. I find it's a really, really stunning film.
Yeah, the form of it is completely remarkable. There's a number of these kind of gliding, tracking dolly shots. I don't even know how they're moving the camera as fluidly as they are, and it just feels like you are her just walking around Paris at points, and it's this amazing travelogue wrapped around this narrative. And I think that ties a lot into her documentary eye, and that's more in the realm of the films that we've got you three in to talk about as well. So we will jump straight back to Beth, I'm afraid. I know you mentioned...
I'm afraid.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
But, well, I think it ties in nicely to what you're saying about this presence of death, this celebration of death.
Yes.
That's kind of running through the films, and that definitely ties into the film that you were writing about for the Gleaning Truths essays as well.
Absolutely, and I think it's great actually where you're talking about things like the dolly shots. So Jacques Denon begins with this really sweeping tracking shot which follows a young Jack as he's running through his father's garage, and it's such a detriment to her her loyalty to filmmaking and really rolling up his sleeves and getting things done. So they obviously had to rush making the film. So the film came into production after they realised that Jacques Demy unfortunately had contracted AIDS. And so they realised that time was limited. So she galvanised, instead of, you know, wallowing, she galvanised this big crew. They got three cinematographers to sort of work in shifts, and they went and tracked down his father's original garage to film Jacques Denon, and she really felt that a tracking shot was the only way to begin the film. They didn't have the equipment, so they went over to another film shoot which was going on not too far away, the only other film shoot going on in sort of this radius, and sort of bullied them into giving her this crane so that she could go and do this tracking shot, so they had the perfect start to this film. So I think this film says so much about her. I mean, all of her films, you're basically looking at her insides without being too gross when you see an Agnès Varda film, because she lends so much and she gives so much of herself to these films. And this, to me, feels like the most personal of them all. It's such a like bittersweet act of remembrance. So she had Jacques on set with her, sort of overseeing the production as it was going on. Sometimes he was too ill to kind of be on set and to help exec produce, but he'd be there with his family, and his family would help to fill them in on things that perhaps he had trouble remembering. And it's one of her longer films, and it's one of her... It wasn't really made for the public, so it might not be the most accessible necessarily, but I think as an act of filmmaking, and as an act of marriage as well. So he actually died, unfortunately, after shooting had finished, but before post-production had started. So she was there in this editing suite. There's a really great... If you get a chance to watch any of the special features around the film... she describes in an interview how she was just working in the editing suite, just in floods of tears, because obviously her husband had died, but they hadn't paused production, and she just had him in front of her moving around the frame as if he was still alive. So if you think about that when you're watching the film and you don't, you know, feel completely overwhelmed.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it, and I read your essay and I got a bit teary just reading that. So I know I'm going to struggle through the film.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore this film. Mm. I think possibly it's my absolute favourite. And also such a great film about filmmaking and about the birth of cinephilia. And you see her recreate the young Jacques, you know, going to the cinema and starting to make his first home movies. And it almost reminded me of something like Son of Rambo, which I know, isn't it? But just in terms of the kind of this joyous sort of playful love of cinema. Yeah, I think it's a really, really gorgeous film. And as you say, also a wonderful tribute and sort of act of love.
Just from reading your essay, Beth, it seems that she has a real ability of just highlighting details almost by accident, and this way that something might stretch out a moment that it feels like a minute long of just holding on something. And I think we see that in Cleo as well, the way that time kind of expands and contracts throughout. Mm. And I think that kind of leads us onto The Gleaners and I, which as much as it's began as a documentary for her, it's a journey of her own craft as well.
Mm. Absolutely. So The Gleaners and I think it's interesting. It's probably her best loved film in terms of the response that she had to it. But it's absolutely a film both about, it's a documentary about, well, or rather it begins as a documentary about gleaning, which is a practice that's enshrined in French law whereby after the harvest is finished, people were allowed to go and pick up the remains from the ground. And that tradition has always existed in French society, and Varda starts by exploring that, and then from that sort of goes outward to explore the way that gleaning exists in contemporary French society now, whether that's through people, you know, scavenging in bins, or whether it's kind of as a sort of salvaging as an artistic practice. But it's as much a portrait of Varda as an artist as it is about this practice of gleaning. And she compares her own artistic process to the process of gleaning, whereby she goes and she salvages little bits of information, little portraits of people, little moments, and fashions it into a wider narrative. And I think it's also as much about her coming to terms with her age and with the passage of time as it is as much as anything else.
Mm. What I love about seeing Varda now and seeing her in Gleaners and just clips throughout the last 60, 70 years is that she's always embracing this new technology as well. That she's always quite happy to throw herself in with, what it, was it mini DV in Gleaners and I, and which seems like the least cinematic form to make something of. And, it just, and as you say in your essay, it's got this wonderful home video feel, but not in an amateur way at all.
Well, in some ways it does. It's sort of it's quite kind of grainy, and there are moments where it's, you know, slightly kind of pixelated, or where she forgets to put the lens cap back on the camera. And so in some ways it feels quite sort of ramshackle, and it doesn't have this kind of cinematic formalism that something like Cleo does. But it has this amazing kind of agility, and the fact that she's shooting on digital allows her to really kind of play up the sort of the playful side of her filmmaking. And I think it also allows her access to people that she wouldn't necessarily have been able to interview otherwise, or perhaps who wouldn't have been so forthcoming if she'd have turned up with a big crew and said, you know, you're living rough on the streets, let's talk about your experience. So it's a real kind of leveling technique, but it's amazing to see someone in her 70s, as she was at the time, embracing new technology in that sort of way.
It's obviously not, but there are these moments of almost accidental purity to it. I know Beth in Shaktanon, you said there's this resting on a wedding ring.
So there's these really intimate moments where, and this also lends itself to kind of her choices in equipment and things, where she didn't have a viewfinder or anything, so she just went in blind as such. So she's filming Jacques Demy on a beach, which is upon his insistence because he knows how important beaches are to Agnès Varda, which is a big theme of hers, as well as cats, obviously. So she's sort of just gets right up on him, for want of a more technical term, that she wants to create this almost uncomfortable level of intimacy where she kind of runs the camera over his, you know, his mottled skin and the hairs on the back of his hand, and a lot of the time resting on his wedding ring. And you only really see her in the film once, and it's with her hand on his shoulder with her wedding ring on the back, and it's resting in the same way that his mother does in his earlier life.
Well, going back to that, the technology and her kind of throwing herself into it, a couple of years ago Agnès Varda signed up for Instagram on the recommendation of JR. And I think that leads us into Faces, Places, which I think she's firmly put herself in the 21st century well with this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everything that you're saying about how she's embraced technology throughout her years, even though she's, you know, well into her 90s now, she's still able to be fascinated and curious about how we as a people are deciding to express ourselves and capture ourselves and then present it in all the different mediums. And yeah, she's fascinated with Instagram, but she is aware of how much it can be overindulged in. And I loved watching as well in The Gleaners and I, again, as going back to what you were saying about the images of her using the camera and like breaking that fourth wall. And even if you look back and listen to her talking about her very early days, and she was a photographer, her fascination in people and making those images and wanting to make those images move led her into wanting to make films. So she's always had this innate fascination and desire and natural born talent, if you like, to record and present and represent people, especially those that don't necessarily get the representation that they deserve or the mainstream media decide to put out there.
I'm almost going full circle from her studying photography now to making a film about it, really, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it's great because she's also, what I loved most about Faces, Places was this cross-generational conversation that's going on with JR, who's like 36, 35, and herself, and yet they're still able to have a language that transcends the gap that they have. They're still able to connect with the fact that they're both fascinated people and they want normal, in inverted commas, people to be able to be represented and presented into culture. And I think that's a lot. In my essay, I talk a lot about how they are connecting on that. So JR's work is... essentially, he was also just a vagabond, if you like, in the city of Paris. And he was a graffiti artist, and he found a camera on one of his journeys with his friends, and he just started taking pictures of it. It was just a cheap little camera. And he took photos and they developed them, and then he wanted to give them back to the people that he took the photos of. And then the rest was history. He basically spent the rest of his career taking more photos and putting them up and blowing them up really large and putting them on landscapes so that people could see, and giving their images back to the city, if you like. And if anybody who's watched even one Agnes Varda film knows that that's exactly the essence of what Agnes is about. She wants to present those that may otherwise fall through the cracks. Mm. And again, with Gleaners and I, that is essentially the essence of the Gleaners and I as well. We're talking about things that fall through the cracks that people see as waste, that she sees as beauty. So yeah, I just love this romance, cinematic romance that was going on between these two incredible artists, and to create this really interesting, very easy to watch, but very deep, meaningful documentary.
Mm. And so we've kind of gone on this chronology through a few films here. And there was actually a retrospective in Canada, in Toronto, last year for Agnes's work, which had the name of that retrospective was Radical Kindness, which I thought was a really lovely name, and is a nice kind of through line through all these works as well. And I'm wondering, along with perhaps any of the other films, what other maybe interlinking themes you might find throughout this work, and what people might expect to find if they travel throughout Gleaning Truths as well?
I think one of the things that perhaps we haven't touched on, but I think is relevant to every single film that we're talking about, and actually throughout so much of her work, is a kind of playful playing with form. Mm. And I think the way in so many films she combines both drama and also documentary. And certainly in something like, I mean, The Gleaners is more of a straightforward documentary, although it sort of it takes many forms. But something like, I mean, even Cleo or La Pointe Court have a sort of a dramatic narrative, as well as something around the outsides that feels like a kind of ethnographic portrait of a place. And I think that the sort of interweaving of different formal ideas and different formal techniques is something that you find throughout her filmography.
Yeah, I think it's something like, I think she's described it herself as kind of, it's like doc realism, like documentary realism with like theatrical performances, which I think is so lovely that she's able to embellish on the everyday. And something else I really appreciate is how she appreciates authenticity. So she really does sort of remain true to a place and a space that she is filming within. You know, she tends to hire unscripted people to exist within. Within her scenes. I know with Cleo from 5 to 7, a lot of the sort of extra, well, they weren't extras, they were just people sort of walking around that she kind of coerced to be in this film that just happened to be within that space at the time. Mm. So I think she's got this real sense of authenticity and a huge amount of respect for the subjects and the spaces that she films within.
Mm. Absolutely. She definitely sees the beauty in everyday life. And I think she said something about the best drama you can see is just sitting by the side of a road and watching people walk by, and people watching is my favourite hobby, just sitting having a coffee and just watching people. And I really, really got that from my first watch of Cleo 5 to 7. It really indulged my love of watching people and watching people just talk to one another, and all the noises that and all the clatters and the mini conversations that are going on within the cafe. I just loved that. It was a sort of mini happy chaos, but I was like, I recognise that, and here's what we are experiencing through Agnes's eyes, and that's what she enjoys doing, and I enjoy doing that as well. But yeah, she certainly sees the beauty in everyday people. She sees the celebrity in everyday people, and it doesn't have to be this, you know, when she was talking about going into rural France to do Faces Places, which, by the way, had no script, no real ambition other than to make a film. She didn't even know JR very well at all. Two people just like, let's make a film. We don't know what we're going to... Well, they didn't even know they were going to make a film. It could have been anything. But 2 years later, Faces Places came about, and it was just really, like I was saying, it was really the essence of how much these people look at how important it is to make sure that the everyday man becomes somebody that we can all appreciate and see the beauty in.
She's also a wonderful portraitist of women. If you think of Cleo in Cleo from 5 to 7, or Mona in Vagabond,
And the widows in Faces Places as
Yeah,
well.
Absolutely. Or one sings and the other doesn't. Or in fact, even of herself. You know, so many of particularly these later sort of essay documentaries are in some ways portraits of Agnes Varda as much as anything else.
Brilliant. Well, if you want to explore these portraits of Varda, you can do so on the Gleaning Truths programme. That covers Le Pont Court, Cleo from 5 to 7, Le Bonheur, One Sings, The Other Doesn't, Vagabond, what we've talked about today, Jacques Denon, The Gleaners and I. You've also got The Beaches of Agnes and, of course, Faces Places, which is out on the 21st of September. And we will be dedicating a whole new episode of the podcast to that film as well. If you can't make it to any cinemas to watch any of these, they are nationwide, but you can get them on demand as well by visiting Curzon Home Cinema, and all of the films I've just mentioned are on there. Also on there, you've still got Apostasy, the film by Daniel Cocatello, that's gone down really well, really impressive British debut, and we've actually got an interview with Daniel on this very podcast, so if you go back a few episodes, you'll be able to find that. Last week, we released a Q&A with the team behind Love and Friendship, so that was featuring Whit Stillman, the writer and director, along with Tom Bennett, the breakout star of that film, who you might recognise from Phone Shop and the David Brent film. Extremely funny guy, incredible performance, so go back and listen to that Q&A and go and watch the film on Home Cinema 2 if you've not seen it. And if you've got any thoughts on any of the films that we've mentioned from the Gleaning Truth seasons, we'd love to have you email us. You can do so at podcast@curzon.com, and we'll read those out in the coming weeks. Or if you've already been lucky enough to see Faces Places, do email us about that and we'll save that for September. But that's about it for the Gleaning Truths episode. I just want to say thank you to Rowan, Karina and Beth for coming along and chatting through these and sending your essays in the first place. They're all brilliant, and there are six more essays that you can find online, and you just find them at agnesvarda.co.uk. We got that URL. It's not just those essays you guys have done. I'm sure there's other places that people can find you too.
Yeah, so if you follow me at Beth K. Webb on Twitter.
And I am Karina at Twitter, and you can follow Bechtel Test Fest at Bechtel Test Fest. We're on all the usual social media platforms.
And you guys, you're taking part in Gleaning Truths as well with a special event.
Yeah, we were honoured enough to team up for the launch at Curzon Soho last week, which was great. And we're taking...
what's the film that we're doing?
Oh my God. So we'll be doing a special Bechtel partnered event at Watershed in Bristol, which is The Gleaners and I.
Yes, and that's going to be one of our first Bechtel Test Fest events outside of London, so we're really excited.
We're going regional, and we're very excited.
And if people want more Rowan Woods, where can they find that?
They can find more Rowan Woods on Twitter, at Rowan Woods.
And a bit of Misc Films as well, maybe?
Yes, and if they want some of my curation work, we're also on Twitter, at Misc, MISC_Films. And our next event is a very natural companion piece to Agnes Varda, actually. We're doing it's the second half of our Kevin Costner season. We're screening Bull Durham at the Regent Street Cinema in London on the 21st of August.
Wonderful. And I'm going to do a plug myself, actually. Sorry. If you haven't had enough of me on your podcasts, I would recommend checking out a new show called Ghibliotech, which is all about the films of Studio Ghibli. And this Friday, we've actually got a special guest to talk about My Neighbour Totoro, and that is Beth Webb.
It was a lot of fun. I'm very excited to hear it back.
Look out for that in your feeds as well. Next week, we're talking about Xavier Beauvoir's The Guardians. It's not a prequel to a space opera. It's actually just a new art house European film. But you can check that out as well. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.